Welcome to ITE1 Module 8, Part 2. All right, so before we start, any questions on anything? Does anyone remember last week's lecture?
I'll put my hand up and say no.
I didn't think so. All right.
Bits of it. That doesn't mean we're going to go back from the beginning again, though,
No,
guys.
no, 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 no.
Sorry, my
Don't
mouth
worry.
is full. Yes.
That's all good. All right.
The other thing we're reminding people about before we get started is virtual machine chat tomorrow, remember?
Yes, we're doing virtual
Cool.
machines. So, if you want to do virtual machines, you should
And now is
come
about the
and
time you
join
should
us.
be looking at them.
Yep. So tomorrow, Pat, virtual machines is our topic. It will be on Ventrilo, and not Team Talk, because it's not
It
stereo,
doesn't
and
need
we
to
can
be
do
on
that.
Team Talk.
No.
I can bridge
Great,
the two together,
thanks.
so it's not a problem. We can bridge Ventrilo and Team Talk for the we don't like Team Talkers. That's easy.
Yeah, we probably should, because there might be team talkers that want to do it. Okay, the other thing, tell your friends, family, dogs, rehab agencies, whoever. Enrollments are open. They haven't been announced yet because I have to fix the website up and fix the dates and other bits of broken. But once that happens, I'll be announcing it. But anyone who wants to is w welcome to put in their application for classes that they want to take. If you don't feel you are going to pass this year and you feel like it's too much of a rush for you and it's not going to happen and you want to take courses next term, just send an email to
Yeah,
Cavi
just means
Instructors
pass
and we
this
will
semester.
set you up this semester, yeah. Not next semester.
Actually, no, the emails go to
If Cavi info.
cavinfo@qcat.org. Yeah,
Yes. Oh,
qcat.org.
cavinfo@qcat.org. Well, but Gmail or QCAT will both work.
QCAT, whatever. They'll both go into the same area.
The other thing I was going to say next week, very quickly, while we're announcing things, a lecture with Derek Lane and Patrick Perdue and a guitarist next week on audio effects. So if you don't care, can you please email Cavi Instructors and we won't run it, but we've got quite a lot of professional talent coming in next week. So looking forward to that.
This is what reverb does. This is
Yeah,
what
of course
chorus
it is.
does. This is why you should
And it's
like reverb
completely
and
okay
chorus.
if you want to email and say we I don't care about this, don't it's better to do
We're not
that than
gonna
not
like
show
call
up.
you out.
We're like, okay, you don't care, because basically last week I said, well, honestly, I don't care about this lecture, and I've made it very
Not a
clear that I
single
would not
student came.
be attending. So do, if you don't care, write in and let us know.
That'll also tell us what kind of topics we may or may not do for next time. If we know people don't like a certain thing that much, then we'll try and find things that people do like.
Also, the alacrity with which people attend will also determine how long it's going to take me to put the archive recordings up. We've got people just depending on the recordings now, so I'm in no hurry with those, except for the lectures, which of course go up in a timely fashion.
Absolutely. Okay, so any other questions, comments about any of that? Sweet! All right, let's go. A media access control, or MAC address, is a physical address assigned to every network interface card on every device. Your local IPv6 address will incorporate your MAC address, so that's going to keep them all different and separate and everything. This is also known as a physical address. You can equate your fingerprint or name to address because these refer to your physical body and are unlikely to change.
I
Does
think
anyone know?
fingerprints works better for that analogy.
Hang
I
on,
wonder.
with fingerprints, isn't the fingerprint different on each finger though?
But your whole 10
That is
fingerprints will never
true,
change
but
unless you like burn your fingers off.
or sand the
Or just cut
fingerprints
off the
off,
other
yeah.
fingers. We don't need those.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder though, the
Well,
Supreme
they're not changing in
Court.
a hurry.
Yeah. The Supreme Court of the US ruled that IP addresses could not be tied to people for legal purposes or to human beings.
No,
I wonder if
they
this would.
actually argued that it couldn't be tied in the case of peer-to-peer file transfer, and there were very specific restrictions. If you have a radius log and an IP address, tough, because you've now got proof that that person logged in for at that time. It was just the IP address they were trying to put. So if you've actually got a login
Okay.
that says user A Stealer has connected at 7:15 p.m., in the radius log, then yeah. So,
oh, okay.
And IP addresses are user assigned. MAC addresses are usually burnt into ROM. So there's the difference.
Right. So I'm assuming that this will this IPv6 will make it so that IP addresses are more easily tied to machines, and I'm guessing the legal system will
just a bit
incorporate that.
There's actually an anonymity stuff in there to prevent that, actually, and that's actually a series of standards that they're working on to stop that from happening to the extent that everybody fears.
Okay.
They'll work it out when we get there. Okay, so does anyone know DHCP, what that is?
Dynamic
Host Control Protocol.
Yay! You both can share
that
a virtual
thing
lollipop.
That thing was the bane in my existence for ages, so I will never forget it again.
Okay, DHCP is, yes, as you said, Dynamic Host Control Protocol. It is a way of automatically assigning IP addresses information to hosts so that no duplicate or invalid address information is assigned. This is basically because if you didn't have this, you'd have to go through to every computer on your network, which could be 2, it could be 200, and manually put it in. With DHCP, this just happens. Did someone have something to say?
And just that if you were manually putting it in, if you got one digit on just one machine wrong, it wouldn't work.
Basically, yeah. Or if you duplicated it by accident because you weren't keeping track, you're going to have 2 machines blowing up, and you might not quite know what the deal is.
They don't blow up, they just don't work, just so that you don't get terrified.
They just
that,
don't.
No, you're not put, really blow yeah, up.
Duplicate IP address.
No. I
not quite that literally.
Literally. This is usually a feature of your router. If DHCP is enabled, the host looks for a DHCP server and sends a request for address information. The server then picks an IP address from its database and offers it to the host. The host then accepts the addressing information, and the server leases it to the host for a specific period of time. On most home routers, it's going to be about a week. If there's no DHCP server found, Windows assigns you an automatic private IP address, or a PIPA.
I've seen it like this for a day.
Huh?
A lot of them are a day. Some of them are for a week. It just depends on the router and stuff.
All the ones I've had have been for a day.
A lot of the ones I've had are mainly a week.
The link sisters are a week, and the D-links and stuff are 86,400 seconds or a day. But yeah, just depends. Ours are actually for a month at home, but that's okay.
This address starts with a 169 and allows you to communicate with clients on your local network that also have a PIPAs. Your computer will request regular IP addresses every 5 minutes. Now, if you ever feel like you need to go offline for a little while and you're in a Kavi class, you just simply tell people that you are doing the a PIPA lab. That is a non-existent lab in the course, but nobody else knows that. So yes, you're going to go do the APIPA lab.
Don't encourage them.
That's messed up.
hey, I did it. Well, anyway.
I might be doing my APIPA lab next sure. Thursday, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, you'll miss out on Module 9 then. Most home ISPs...
No, sorry, Thursday.
No, I think he wants to miss the audio effect thing.
Oh, yeah, I think I'll possibly be doing mine as well. But...
Oh, listen to it, I'm geeky enough.
Patrick's a clever chap.
Oh, Patrick's awesome, but yeah. Most home ISPs give customers one public IP address. You may be wondering how people are able to connect more than one computer to the internet. Your router uses Network Address Translation, or NAT, to translate your private IP the private IP address of each device to your public address. So you're behind this NAT translator, and basically it makes all of your private IPs work on your public IP so that you can have all of your devices on the internet. Protocol is a set of rules. So, an internet protocol, or internet protocols, are sets of rules for network communication. When you send a letter in the mail, you are using a protocol. The letter goes in an envelope, and the address of the person receiving it goes in one place on the envelope, and your return address goes in another. And then you have to add postage, or they're not going to send your mail because you didn't pay the money. If you were to swap the two locations of the addresses, or not include postage, the letter would not reach its destination. The main function of network protocols...
Unless you were blind.
Well, then you have to write free matter for the blind.
Yeah, if you free matter it, or a free article for the blind or whatever, but if you haven't done that, then you're still not going to get your letter sent.
It's still going to be... Yep. The main function of network protocols, or functions of network protocols, include identifying errors, compressing the data, deciding how data is to be sent, addressing data, and deciding how to announce sent and received data. Another very important thing a network protocol specifies is timing. Messages must reach their destination within a certain time so that computers do not wait forever to receive messages that have become lost, because lots of packets get lost every minute or two, and if your computer had them, you'd never get anything done. If an expected message fails to reach its destination in the allotted time, the protocol may define alternative steps that the receiving host will take. Some protocols are actually a group of protocols that are dependent on each other called a suite. Visualize a suite of protocols as being layered. So, we're going to make everybody hungry here. Imagine a nice layered cake. You've got the spongy, yummy vanilla cake on the bottom layer. You've got chocolate on in the middle, just some nice, yummy white chocolate goo. Another bit of vanilla cake, and then some yummy strawberries, and let's have one more bit of vanilla cake.
Hey, and what about cream?
Oh no, that's going on top!
But no, instead of having vanilla cake, we've actually got vanilla cake, chocolate cake, and some other sort of...
lemon cake, why not?
Just so the layers are different, so we don't have two vanilla cake layers.
Unless the ID mate reads it to you.
Well, yeah. So we've got all sorts of yummy layers, and that is what our protocol stacks look like, our suite of protocols. Layered stack. I need to fix my sensitivity. All right, so yummy, yummy layered cakes. We'll come back to this. A layer can be made up of one protocol or many protocols. We will go over this table one in class. Everybody in chat, because we're going to actually ask about what these port numbers for protocols are. And we'll go in order. And if you guys don't know, you're welcome to just say pass. Otherwise, we're going to see how many of these protocols we know. And we'll do this multiple times throughout the course.
Why am I doing this? I'm not supposed to answer.
Just the first of them. Jamie, you are not in chat.
I'm getting...
Okay, no problem. I just go down the list and check if anyone isn't in chat, because you know what? Oftentimes I'm not, and I am unaware of it until someone says something to me, because that's just how blonde I am. Hey. All right. So we're going to go over table one. You may want to also go over table two, because it goes into all sorts of details about the protocols. Okay, so the first protocol is TCP/IP. This does not have a port assigned to it because it is basically a suite of protocols used to transport data on the internet. NetBUI is our next NetBUI/NetBIOS is our next protocol suite. This is on ports 137, 139, and 150. I'm not asking you guys about this because you know what? I can't even remember what ports they are most of the time. This is a small.
I was gonna say, I don't remember that.
Notes are wrong.
Are they?
Yeah, NetBIOS is on 137 if it runs over TCP/IP. NetBUI doesn't use TCP at all. It's just frames directly on the Ethernet. But whatever.
Well, they have it their way.
Oh dear.
I don't know. It's not really that
nobody uses NetBUI
used anymore,
so
it's kind of...
If you just say NetBIOS is on 137, we'll call that even. NetBIOS is on 137. That's right. That'd be more correct. NetBUI.
You won't ever be asked about what port that's on in quizzes. A small, fast protocol designed for a workgroup network that requires no connection to the internet. We've got IPS... SPX.
IPX SPX.
I wrote it wrong. IPX, SPX. I'm like, that doesn't
Interpacket look right. Exchange. I can't remember what the SPX stands for.
And there's a slash, exchange. So it's IPX slash SPX.
SPX. It's a mouthful, and fortunately, it is old and we don't use it because it's a suite of protocols used to transport data on old Novell networks. All right, here's the first one. Aiden, HTTP, what port is it on?
80.
You're right. Okay, this is a communication...
Type that into chat, though.
It doesn't matter. I just got into chat in case somebody doesn't have a microphone on them.
There you go, I typed it in for you.
All right. A communication protocol... Yes, absolutely. That establishes a request/response connection on the internet. This is the basic web. Google, all of that. All right, let's see who's next. Brad, HTTPS, do you know what port that's on?
110?
It's okay if you don't.
It's okay. No, it is on 443. A protocol that uses authentication and encryption to ensure data as it travels between the client and web server. Okay.
Which Google doesn't use for its tokens.
Shop on our secure site. Usually uses SSL and 443.
And you'll see people talk about a padlock icon. Now, this is the icon that sighted people will see when they look at an HTTPS site. So they're not looking at the
like
URL. There's this
page
little
or something.
Yeah, there's this little padlock.
It's like right by the title bar, I think, or very close to it.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And on the interestingly on the Mac, when you're moving around with VoiceOver and you're outside of the web page, it will say lock icon. But the other way you can make absolutely sure that you're on an HTTPS secure page, you can actually have your browser, it gets kind of annoying, but if you're paranoid, you can actually have your browser tell you that this is a secure page, and it'll pop up a dialog box in front of you so you'll know. Or you can check the address and make sure that it starts with HTTPS. And with JAWS you can hit insert A.
That is not always reliable because if you've actually got multiple frames on a page, the thing that appears in the title bar may not be actually in your purchase frame, which is why people say you've got to use the padlock icon. So that's certainly not a given at all.
Yeah. If you have a secure and unsecure page, it will warn you. It will say, this page has an unsecure content. Do you want to show that non-secure content?
There is actually a bug in Facebook where when you log in, it goes in HTTPS, and then it switches you out of HTTPS and puts your cookies in the clear. And there was actually an exploit for Firefox where you could nick people's Facebook login cookies, and then I can't remember what the vulnerability was called, but...
they fixed it. You can now set it to HTTPS login.
It was something sheep, I remember. Maybe not white sheep, but it was something. It was something sheep.
Fire sheep. It was fire sheep. I had images of these like sheep on fire.
Mary had a little lamb and Firefox shot it dead.
Something like that.
Oh my god.
But that is a problem, and it is fixed that you go and you can click SSL login, but let's face it, who actually bothers? And who actually remembers to in the internet cafe? And the biggest problem they actually found with this whole thing was that the actual server load for providing secure access was actually too much for Facebook servers if they rolled it out globally. So, something to think about.
Now, that brings up an interesting point. You mentioned in the internet cafe and stuff. When I, on Windows 7, when I say, hey, I'm on a public network, what precautions does that actually... I know it's not quite what we're talking about.
You're not file sharing.
Do you know what that actually does?
Nothing in Internet
Okay, so
Explorer.
That makes sure that's off.
Nothing is shared. Your firewall can be on.
No incoming connections to your computer through a public network unless you specifically allow them through the firewall.
Okay.
It just basically just locks your computer down a bit.
Talking of HTTP and HTTPS, Google just, like... day or two ago found a vulnerability where they would be sending out all their login tokens to Android devices in clear text, not in HTTPS. Yeah, people weren't too happy about that. They're fixing that with an update now, but basically the token would also be valid for 2 weeks. So anyone sniffing your network could grab that token, log in as you on all your Google services. And it was great. But that's with, if you update to the latest Android, of course, that fix the problem.
Depends on when your carrier rolls it out. Though one of the Android problems is that
probably
there's a lot of carrier fragmentation.
Fairly quickly.
You'd
think. No, there is a lot of fragmentation. They reckon 97% of Android devices are hackable. So have fun with that.
Woo! Okay, Brian Shaw, one or both ports for FTP?
21 and 22, I believe.
You're half right. 20 and 21.
Well,
that's okay. A protocol that provides services for file transfers and manipulation. All right. Edward, do you know the protocol or the port number for SSH?
It's actually ironic that you asked that question because I was using it today, and it is port 22.
Good job!
Because it would not allow that connection, and it said port 22 is refusing this connection, and I just so happened to make a note of that. But I got it working, but it's ironic that you asked that.
All right. This is a protocol used to securely connect to a remote network device. Okay.
As Bianca says, SSH or I'll bash you. Which is a Unix joke for the
two
people on the channel that will get it.
Jamie, how about Telnet?
I'll pass on that one.
Okay, it is port 23. It is a protocol used to connect to a remote network device. Okay, Luke, how about POP? POP 3.
That's an email protocol, and it's 110.
You are right. Absolutely. Good job. A protocol used...
Or rather, it's for downloading messages. I'll be
it
more
is.
Pedantic.
A protocol used to download email messages from an email server. All right. So, if we have POP, Pat, what would the port for IMAP be?
143.
Great job, absolutely. This is a protocol used to download email messages from an email server, just like POP, but not. We'll talk about that in some module later. Sam, do you know the port for SMTP?
I think so, it's 25.
You are right. This is a protocol used to send mail in a TCP/IP network. And, Vanessa, you get a pass this time, but don't worry, we'll go in reverse order next time. Alright, good job, you guys. As I said, you don't have to know them at this point, but it's always good to ask to see, you know.
Isn't there a test question?
There are multiple test questions in different exams about these. I don't think there are any in Module 8. Are there, Luke?
I honestly can't remember.
I don't think so. Not this time.
Yeah, I don't know.
You'll get one on the final, though.
And if anyone wants to know any of those abbreviations that we just ran through, again, my glossary, yeah.
Yeah, he did a really good glossary. Email us if you want
it. I never got a copy of that. I want a copy of that.
You have a copy.
It will turn up
in
the
Deviant.
IT.
So do I.
Yeah, it's in Deviant.
Is it?
And turn up on the web server after lecture. I'll stick it up in the IT1 area. You'll all get it.
There we go.
All right. Internet Control Message Protocol. ICMP is used by devices on a network to send control and error messages to computers and servers. It has many functions, including announcing network errors, announcing network congestion, and troubleshooting. The best example of ICMP in action is ping. Has anyone not played with ping? And it's okay if you haven't, let us know. Because we might do a demonstration. Okay. Want to do a quick demo of ping? Is anyone interested?
Usually when you call your ISP, that's the very first thing they want you to do.
Absolutely. So what we're going to do is hit Windows R right now, and it's going to pop up a run dialog box. Once you're there, we're going to type What? Yeah. Follow along in your book. Type in CMD and press enter.
That's Charlie Mike Delta, CMD. In case anybody thought it was something else.
All right. All right. Yeah, you don't want that. What you've got here in front of you is a command line window. So we're going to ping qcat.org because we can, and I believe it's still pingable. So you're going to type in ping, P-I-N-G, hit space, and you're going to type in www.qcat.org and press enter and have a listen to what it says. Okay, so can anyone explain what is happening here? What are you hearing? What's going on? Well, not you, Vanessa. Has anyone given this a go?
Yeah, I am. It didn't say anything, but hang on, I did it again now.
I had a whole bunch of numbers pop up.
Mine's going crazy.
Yeah, that's what you're gonna get.
Are you on the
on the Mac? Hit Control C. It pings forever.
Oh shoot!
There are ways to stop it from doing that. You can do --ping --C4 and whatever the URL. You can also do -A and you'll get audible pings. Thank you, Carrie, for teaching me that. That's really awesome.
Control C stopped that crap. Okay.
Okay. Yep. What that crap is actually? Go ahead.
It helps to have your window maximized there.
It does.
It does. It really does.
On the Mac, it really.
It's now,
like
everybody,
64 bytes.
In the HTML curriculum, there is glossary.rtf. Your mileage may vary. If it breaks, keep both pieces. Limit of one per customer, okay? Battery is not included.
It will be updated without notice at some point.
Yeah, that's what without notice means.
Yeah. I was thinking about ping.
That stands for Packet Internet Groper, in case anybody cared.
Yeah.
Let your packets do the walking.
That causes all sorts of interesting images, doesn't it?
Yeah.
That's only a pig if it doesn't work.
Gotcha.
Okay, so what's happening with the ping is that your computer is sending an ICMP request to our QCAT server and saying, hey, are you there? And the server is going to respond with, yes, I am. So they're sending 32 bytes out and then...
It's kind of an are we there yet thing. They're sending four requests. Are we there? Are you there yet? Yes. Are you there yet? Yes. Are you there yet? Yes.
And your Mac will just keep sending them, but
Linux does
Windows stops
too,
at four.
To be fair.
So if you feel
mine to stop.
Yeah. If you are worried about your internet not working and you're wondering what's going on, you can ping www. and see if you get a response. Google's always pingable.
In tech support, we were told not to ping Microsoft sites like Hotmail because they wouldn't accept them. So we were given red.com.
I don't think you can. There's also purple.com, which when you go to it basically just shows a purple page. But it's useful for... T-Mobile gave me that one to tell whether my... They wanted to see whether my connection worked.
You can also, if you suspect a DNS server, you can ping an IP address. You can ping a name, and if that doesn't work, and an IP address does work, you know that you have a problem with your DNS server.
It's interesting to note that Skype will work in the absence of DNS. MSN Messenger will not.
Yes, it will. One of the things also, it's meant to. Now, one of the things you can do as well. Is if you're trying to figure out if your internet's not working and you're trying to work out is it my router that's not working or is it the modem that's not working, you can ping the default gateway. So on your Linksys router, for example, you can ping 192.168.1.1, and if that doesn't give you anything, then you probably need to reboot your router.
Yep.
Mine was doing that a lot before I put tomato.
And we have all sorts of conversations about how to tell if things are if it's your router or if it's your whatever in Discovery. So if you're interested in knowing a lot about troubleshooting home networks, that next term will be for you, taught by a couple of students in this class, actually, next term.
Also, keep in mind that how many computers have you seen that are not on a network in 2011?
Yeah.
Just the person that's only running one computer, which is very rare these days, but you still do find it on occasion.
You're still going to be on the internet. That's a network. That's a big old network.
PlayStation's going
PlayStation,
on
the iPod, cell phone.
Maybe if the computer at the day center doesn't have the internet and they just play solitaire on it, but...
The day room? Yeah.
Might be.
Stop that, Sean. I spend hours on Facebook at the day center. I resent that.
Do you?
Didn't key up. That was hilarious.
Do you?
If I can get it to load.
What happened? Did Vanessa have some...
I gotta update my status.
I died. Okay.
That's awesome. Moving on.
Okay, so that's ping. All right. There are other ICMP messages that report undelivered packets, data on IP network. Okay, I've got somebody who says it's discussions like these who make me miss the simple old days of dial-up networking. And I've just got to have a little bit of a laugh here, because I didn't find anything simple about dial-up networking.
No.
I didn't either. I text more, so I can tell from better experience. Yes, you know, some things are a little bit simpler, but some things are a lot more difficult, too. You still have to play with DNS servers. We still had to release and renew IP addresses and DNS and flush the DNS servers. Yes, that is a command, flush DNS. dial-up networking may have had some simple ways of making a connection and might be a little bit better in that the workings are exposed so you can actually tell exactly what breaks. But still, it's still pretty complicated.
Yeah, it ain't easy.
You wake up screaming at night, don't you, Aiden, remembering this. I can just see this is an issue because it's close to your heart. You just wake up and go, no, redial it!
No, it's not at night. It's when I'm at the mall and I hear that really loud debit machine dialing in. And I always hold my breath and wait for the network sound. Is it going to go? Is it going to go? And it goes, yes! Something's here.
Just one point. That's awesome. Some of us remember the bad old days of Trumpet Winsock under Windows 3.1.
Oh.
It did get easier than that, especially when in XP you could get the disk from your ISP that would set it up all for you most of the time.
Yeah.
And then for the other times, you'd just call Aiden at tech support.
Yeah. The good thing was that the dial-up networking components were exposed. The bad thing was that the dial-up networking components were exposed. Because if it broke, it broke well.
But you use it every day when you read your tweets on the train, Grace. You use dial-up networking.
Yeah. And you know how many problems I have with it? Seriously. It can be a little bit ridiculous, because when it breaks good. Hey. All right.
Did we talk as much about dial-up in this chapter as we used to?
No.
I think it gets a passing.
Because I know in 4.0 it was... In 4.0, was a lot about it.
We don't do that anymore.
Whoa.
Okay.
Okay, that's good.
IP... Or these are... ICMP messages are used to report undelivered packets. Data on an IP network that includes a source and destination IP address and whether a device is too busy to handle the packets. Data in the form of a packet arrives at a router, which is a networking device that forwards data packets across networks towards their destinations. If the router does not know where to send the packet, the router dumps it. That packet is gone. It's just, no, done, thank you. The router then sends an ICMP message back to the sending computer, informing it that the data was not deliverable. When a router becomes very busy...
That's better than what the mailman does sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes they deliver it, and you don't know they didn't deliver it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
When a router becomes very busy, it might send a different ICMP message to the sending computer to indicate that it should slow down due to congestion on the network.
Source quench.
Next, we will talk about physical network devices. We did a little bit about of this.
Sorry, just a go ahead. Just a question. Does ICMP run on any particular port, or is it just sort
no.
of...
Yes.
Does it?
Yes, ICMP has a port number. ICMP code number 7
no.
is ping, is echo request. So there are actually port numbers embedded in the ICMP protocols. They are not the same as TCP and UDP ports, however, and they do not overlap in any way. But yes, each message has its own different number.
Oh, okay,
right.
So
ICMP does not have one port.
Okay.
No, yeah. But you see, if you drop ICMP port 7 messages and you only drop 7, you'll just stop ping. You'll still allow source quench, fragmentation, exceeded, all of that to work. So a lot of people stop ICMP dead in the water, which is a problem because you'll never get network unreachable, host unreachable, any of that sort of stuff. So that's why there is a port number.
All right. So we're going to talk about physical devices, which we did a little bit of last week. Hubs are very simple networking devices. When they receive data, they forward it out through every other port. They care about everybody's business but their own, as Sean says. Since all devices receive the transmission, hubs create a lot of network traffic. Hubs are not often used in modern networks. In fact, I think I've seen one ever, and it was on a counter in a computer lab. All right. Remember, files are broken up
into... Our school used to have one.
It does get a little bit clogged up if you have a lot of computers and a lot of data going through. Remember, files are broken up into smaller chunks called packets when being sent over a network. This allows for error checking, and if that packet gets lost, only that packet needs to be retransmitted. Packet loss happens all the time without you even knowing it. With address information is added to the beginning and to the end of the packet before they are transmitted. The pack along with the addressing information is called a frame. LANs are often divided into sections called segments, similar to the way a company is divided into departments. The boundaries of segments can be defined using a bridge. A bridge is a device used to filter network traffic between LAN segments. Bridges keep a record of all the devices on each segment to which the bridge is connected. When the bridge receives a frame, the destination address is examined by the bridge to determine if the frame is to be sent to a different segment or dropped. The bridge also helps to improve the flow of data by keeping frames confined to only the segments to which the frame belongs. Switches are sometimes called multi-port bridges because they have many ports. They are more complex than bridges. A switch maintains a table of the MAC addresses for computers that are connected to each port. When a frame arrives at a port, the switch compares the address information in the frame to its MAC address table. The switch then determines which port to use to forward the frame. This causes much less congestion on the network because each port on a switch is its own network segment, and that information is only going to that one port instead of just being spit out over the hub. So, hubs repeat everything, switches connect network segments, and routers connect networks to each other. They can be computers with special networking software. That's what we have right now, although we're trying to replace it with a little box with a web interface. Yay! Or a standalone device built by a network equipment manufacturer. They use IP addresses to transport frames between networks. Routers contain tables of IP addresses along with optimal destination routes to other networks. Wireless access points allow devices to connect to networks wirelessly using radio waves. As previously discussed, they have a limited range, so multiple access points may be needed. We have 3 in our house. Most home users purchase multi-purpose devices.
We need one.
Yeah, we do need one, but we have 3. They are smaller, cheaper, and it is easier to configure one device than 3 devices. So usually these contain a switch, a router, and a wireless access point. You just configure that up, set it there, and it goes like a mad thing until it crashes, and you have to unplug it, reboot it, and get on with your life. Any questions on network devices?
Just out of interest, if you've ever seen the things on a switch that says contains 4 megabits of memory, that actually tells you how many devices you can connect to that switch before it falls over. And yes, I have seen people connect too many devices daisy-chained onto a little 5-port home switch.
Doesn't surprise me.
How many devices?
Guess what, guys? It's not like a video.
Well, Luke, you're far away from your mic.
You've gone.
Okay, I'm sorry. How many devices would you need to connect to a little home switch to make it fall over?
2048. Don't ask. They had this little 5-port switch, like, cabled right next to the router, and then they had all of their corporate network hanging off it.
Oh, God. Whoa.
That's special.
Yeah, this ought to keep it up.
Yeah, crew, it was $30.
Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, that's always been a difficulty for me, is remembering which device does which, and you're just gonna have to. It'll just get easier, I guess, the more you.
Yeah, you'll hear it enough times and read it enough times.
The way I do it, because I've been doing it for a while, is I go repeater hub, switch. What, should I sing a song, or should I tell a joke, or... Okay, there was this... No, I'm not going to tell that joke. So you've got hubs, and you've got repeaters and hubs. Now, a hub is a multi-port repeater, so you're working your way up from the bottom. Hubs, repeaters, then you've got bridges, switches. A switch is a multi-port bridge, and then the really complex ones, you've got the routers, and that's how I remember it.
It's a lot easier to remember than that, than the all these damn ports.
I can actually remember the ports more than the switches, actually.
Well, the ones you're likely to come across in everyday use are switch, bridge, and router. They're the three that you're mainly going to come across. Anybody else got any questions, queries? We won't tell Archibald Asaldon today. It's very tempting, but we won't. Max is just off taking care of something. Does anybody have any questions on any of the previous modules or anything else? Or are you all so happy with ITE 1 that nobody's got any confusion?
And they're going to take Discovery. Maybe it is time for Archibald Asaldon.
Then they get... Nah.
Not today.
We'd be halfway through and she'd come back.
That's right. And I have to edit it out of the lecture and that would just be tedious. If you really want that, you go to /caviaudio on qcat.org and it's in jokeoftheday.mp3.
And just a comment, the nice little wireless routers and all that connected into one box is not easy to work with, especially when you're trying to get it to repeat to another access point.
Yes, a lot of the actual inbuilt thing all in ones, like if you've got a wireless card, switch, router all built into one, a lot of them do not support WDS, and the ones that do support WDS, which is wireless distribution systems, do not support WDS unless you are using WEP. So you got to watch out for that. That's why you buy real wireless gear. And may I recommend Mikrotik, MIKROTIK. Little Linux-powered boxes with web interfaces. We're having a little bit of a battle to get ours running at the moment, but for, I think it was $80, we got a 5-port gigabit switch, and you can actually split the thing into 6 different networks with complete traffic control and quality of service. So that's been my fun little box. And it uses 3 watts of power when fully loaded.
I had a computer network tech stay at my house till like 2 in the morning trying to get 2 routers from 2 different companies to talk to each other. I guess because one wireless wasn't working, so he tried to get it to talk to another router, which wireless was working. The first router was one of those combos, and the second was, I think, a Linksys. And I pretty much fell asleep after the first 5 minutes. I couldn't understand what he was doing, but that's the part I stayed awake for.
The trick there is, and Grace is just coming back, is to turn off DHCP on one of the routers. Do not have DHCP running on both routers at once, or they will fight with each other.
I've done it. I've done
it. Well, that makes sense.
I have definitely done that to.
Isn't that what we did?
Where the sexist point?
I was about to say there's somebody across the ditch that did that as well.
Yeah, that was That was fun in a box for about 2 days until
it was fun in two boxes.
Me and Grace. Wow, yeah, for two people. Until me and Grace collectively threw up our hands and said, "Stuff it, we are done," and just So I guess the lesson here is firstly buy an all-in-one device with a modem, but secondly don't expect all-in-one devices to talk to other devices because they won't.
Well, they will if you do it right. You may not have hair on your head when you're done, though. Oh, well, yeah. oh, well, that's okay. We're having fun with that again at our house, playing with a couple of a modem and a router and... Oh my goodness. And this router doesn't happen to tell you when connections are up and down.
It does. The new software version does. I'm researching it.
That's
okay.
That's helpful. Because this one doesn't. It's pretty good. Now it's time to talk about cables used in networking. Twisted pair cabling is used for telephone wiring and Ethernet cabling. If I can spell cabling right. In this type of cable, each pair of wires makes a circuit on which data can travel. The two wires in a pair twist together to provide protection against crosstalk. Now, Jaws says this crow's talk. I have pronounced it crow's talk when giving a talk on it.
So if the cable's expensive, is it cabling?
Cabling. Yeah. So, crosstalk. Don't do that. You'll embarrass your poor self like I did. Crosstalk.
The first time I heard crosstalk mentioned was in 4-track tapes. You get that if you've listened to one. You can hear a little bit of the other side. Yeah.
Has anyone ever heard
that? Even will happen on old bad tape recorders. Like you can hear stuff that either was previously recorded or recorded on the other side. Oh, that always.
That's why. That is because the erase head hasn't been demagnetized and it's a crummy erase head. If you actually get a tape with a decent erase head, that won't happen, but sometimes the tape will shift and you can get stuff from the other tracks and stuff.
That always used to really creep me out, but...
Oh, me too.
Fair enough.
Like, hey, what's that doing on there? I thought I recorded over that.
Yeah, what is that? Crosstalk, which is noise generated by other pairs of wires in the same cable. Pairs of copper wires are encased in color-coded plastic insulation and twisted together. An outer jacket protects the bundle of twisted pairs. If you ever have a broken, horrible cable, you could, if you felt like it, dissect it and feel all of this, but do be careful because those wires are sharp if you accidentally bend them. When electricity flows through a copper wire, a magnetic field is created around the wire. A circuit has two wires, and in a circuit, the two wires have oppositely charged magnetic fields. When the two wires of the circuit are next to each other, the magnetic fields cancel each other out. This is called the cancellation effect, and this is what helps get rid of some of that crosstalk. We've got two types of twisted pair cabling. Unshielded twisted pair, or UTP, is the less expensive, more common variety used in most networks. It has two or four pairs of wires. This type of cable relies solely on the cancellation effect produced by the twisted wire pairs that limits signal degradation caused by electromagnetic interference, EMI, and radio frequency interference, RFI, and has a range of 100 meters or 328 feet. Yes, unshielded twisted pair cable has a range of 100 meters or 328 feet. This is testable and very important for you guys to know. The other type of twisted pair cabling is called shielded twisted pair, or STP. Each pair of wires is wrapped in metallic foil to better shield the wires from noise. Four pairs of wires are then wrapped in an overall metallic braid, or foil. STP reduces electrical noise and from within the cable. It also reduces EMI and RFI from outside the cable. It is more expensive and harder to install because it is so thick and it's really not that flexible. Also, the metal shielding must be grounded at both ends. If you don't do this or do it wrong, it acts like an antenna and picks up unwanted signals instead of shielding from them. So it's basically counterproductive. So if you are doing any kind of networking in home or most places, you're going to be using unshielded twisted pair. In fact, I've never seen a shielded twisted pair cable. Has anyone besides Carrie seen one?
That wouldn't be coax.
I think I have.
No, it's not coax.
I think I've seen some, but yeah, not many. And it was more the sort of stuff. It wasn't running from computers to the wall. It was the stuff that was going, you know, from the wall to network stuff. I don't know, but I've seen it in like attached to walls and stuff, and it's in a big plastic thing, like probably about as thick as your thumb.
That's a conduit, and that was probably still unshielded twisted pair.
Okay, well the one I saw, I was told it was network cable, but
it is.
Well,
but
the network cable is
in a conduit. They're really, really not used that much at all. Okay, so UTP, unshielded twisted pair, comes in several categories that are based on two factors. And this is important because you have to know the answer to this. This is a question on the test. This is the number of wires in the cable and number of twists in these wires. Category 3 is the wiring used for telephone systems and for Ethernet LAN at 10 megabits per second. Category 3 has 4 pairs of wires. Category 3 telephone cable is usually terminated by an RJ11 connector. Category 5 and Category 5E have 4 pairs of wires as well, with a transmission rate of 100 Mbps and 1000 Mbps, respectively. Category 5 and Category 5E are the most common network cables used. Category 5E has more twists per foot than Category 5 wiring. These extra twists further prevent interference from outside sources and the other wires within the cable. Some Category 6 cables use a plastic divider to separate the pairs of wires, which prevents interference. The pairs also have more twists than Category 5E cable. Category 5, 5E, and 6 cables terminate into an RJ45 connector. An RJ11 telephone connector has 6 pins, and an RJ45 connector has 8 pins. Okay, any questions on UTP or Ethernet cables in general before we go into coax?
Is Cat6 automatically 1000 Mbps, or does
No.
You can run 10 megabits per second on Cat6 if you want. The minimum requirement for gigabit is Cat5e or better.
You can do it on Cat5, I believe, but it's not necessarily going to work.
But what I'm saying is if I had Cat6 cabling, I could run anything on it, whereas if I had...
Yep. That's right.
But just magically installing Cat6 cable won't take your 100 megabit switch and turn it into a gigabit switch.
Oh, yeah, no, of course.
Well,
but, yeah, it won't. Cat5 won't gigabit because it just said there that it...
Yeah, it will.
Well, no, because you said the maximum speed for Cat5 was 100 Mbps, and so then you said,
people,
you can do...
You could, but you could try. People have tried, but technically... That's not what it's for. You may not get the speeds, and you may have a lot of noise and network troubles if you do try to do that. So technically, it is 100 Mbps maximum for Cat5, but you could try it. Does that make sense?
I guess so.
Coaxial cable is copper cord cabling surrounded by heavy shielding. There are several types of coaxial cable. ThickNet, or 10 base 5 coax cable, used in networks and operating at 10 megabits per second with a maximum length of 500 meters or 1,440.4 feet. ThinNet, 10 base 2 coax cable, used in networks and operating at 10 megabits per second with a maximum length of 185 meters or 607 feet. RJ59, most commonly used for cable television in the US. And we've got RG6, higher quality cable. It's better than your RG59, with more bandwidth and less susceptibility to interference. You're not
okay,
going
so the first
to see
thing is RG59 because you said
yeah
RG59.
I'm sorry. Yes, it is RG59. You're not going to see too much of this in a networking sense. You're going to see your RG59 coming from your cable box to the wall and your cable TV to the wall. But the rest of everything from there is either going to be Ethernet or wireless most of the time.
So
it's really not.
Is RG59 going from my cable modem to the wall, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's not as easy to install it as Ethernet, and it's older and much less flexible. If you feel an RG59 cable, you'll notice how little flex it really has compared to your regular Ethernet cables. Any questions on cable, on coax? Fantastic.
Anyone still awake?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I was asleep for that part. What did you just say? Yes, I was awake.
An optical fiber is a glass or plastic conductor that transmits information using light. These cables have one or more fibers inside of a sheath. We talked about what these looked like last week. It's those little fiber lamps with the little thin cable-y things. Because this is made of glass, fiber optic cable is not affected by EMI or RFI. Because it is made of glass, opening up and going into the actual cores of fiber optic is probably not a good idea because the glass can splinter, and it can splinter into your fingers, and ow! All signals are converted to light pulses to enter the cable and converted back into electrical signals when they leave it. This means that fiber optic cable can deliver signals that are clearer, can go farther, and have greater bandwidth than cable made of copper or other metals. Fiber optic cable can reach distances of several miles or kilometers before the signal needs to be regenerated. Fiber cables are more expensive than other types of cables, and their connectors are harder to assemble. Common connectors for fiber optic networks are SC, ST, and LC. Don't ask me what they look like. I don't know. I've not actually seen them. These three types of fiber connectors are half duplex, which allows data to flow only in one direction, so two cables are needed. They're not simplex because these cables can switch at any time to do the other thing. The two types of fiber optic cables are multimode. This cable has a thicker core than single mode fiber. It is easier to make, can use simpler light sources such as LEDs, and work well over distances of a few kilometers or less. We've got single mode, which this cable has a very thin core, it is harder to make, uses lasers as light sources, and can transmit signals dozens of kilometers with ease. About fiber.
We will talk more about actually opening up these cables and doing all of this scary stuff in Chapter 15, which we may need to help others do, although I don't think I want to be opening up and playing with all kinds of chemicals and clampy things myself.
No, I don't.
But we're still
going to
talk about it
that.
Anyway. No, we're not completely done with fiber, but for now we are.
Look, I'll take apart a lot of things, but I probably wouldn't go inside of a fiber cable. It just is not good news.
No.
But aren't some of them plastic?
Some of them can be.
They are plastic, but the problem is that if you actually strip the plastic off and they are glass inside and you get little glass splinters in your finger, they will go into your bloodstream and possibly kill you.
Yeah, no, but I thought, Kerry, that some of them had plastic fibers in them instead of glass ones these days.
They're still very thin, though, and
then you'll just have plastic going into your bloodstream and killing you.
Oh.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It's not the actual outside of the cables that you can touch or that you'd feel in those little light shows. It's what's inside of those cables that is not
so
good
I guess
for
they're
you.
Not really cables as much as tubes, because you can't really bend them and, you know, mold them into the shape of your favorite animal.
Can.
You can bend them to a large extent, actually. If you bend them in too tight a circle, the light won't go around. But yes, you probably can bend them into the shape of your favorite animal. Fiber cow, anyone?
Yeah, man.
Well, they definitely wouldn't have a shortage of fiber in your diet.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
You had to, didn't you? All right, next we'll talk about network topologies. Now, this is quite an interesting concept to grasp, because networks have two topologies, and these topologies are not necessarily the same. A topology is a map of the physical or logical layout of a network. So, the physical layout is how the devices on a network are physically laid out. This is the easy one. You can the logical topology is how they communicate on the network. You can't see this. You have to memorize this. You have to know how what the logical topologies are of networks. And we will talk about this and we'll go over this. And you do have a question on this in the test. So remember that the physical topology, can you touch it? Where is it laid out? Can you see how it's laid out in a room? The logical topology is how does it communicate inside of a router? Does that make sense to everybody?
Wouldn't that be kind of likened to like a Google map? I mean, you have a map, you have all these roads, but, you know, it's a matter of how they choose to get to point A to point B, and most of the time it's wrong anyways. But, I mean, you know, but it's the mapping.
That is actually
but
a kind of... There is actually a reason why Google Maps are wrong, but I'm not allowed to talk about it on this lecture. But the logical and physical topology is the physical is how it's laid out, as in how somebody's run some string. But yeah, you're right. It's like it's the way you choose to drive. There could be six different ways to get there. It's which route you choose to drive.
It's also kind of like as a blind person, you might learn how the things are laid out, like how a building is laid out, or, you know, a college campus or something. There's how it's laid out, but then there's also what's the most logical way for you to get where you're going that may be totally not logical to someone else who can see and they just know right where they're going. So logically, the way you are deciding to go somewhere may not make as much sense.
Well, a lot of times, you know, with mapping and stuff, I mean, because I use a fair amount of Google Maps stuff and my music stuff, and you can, sometimes you take a little bit further route, but you get there faster because of the, you know, I guess, you know, the highway's bigger, so maybe in this case the bandwidth would be bigger, or that, you know, they have less obstructions, hindrances to get there, so maybe that's
actually why routing, you would choose. That's actually routing. That's not the topology of what's in the router and how it... the way in which it communicates logically between computers. That's actually a routing. That's what a routing table does.
So, but wouldn't the you have the physical, which is the map, and then you have the logical of how you're going to get there. It'd be the same, yeah.
Sort of. The physical is how the computers are laid out. The logical is how the computers are laid out in a in the router. So your computers may be laid out in a star, which is a bunch of different points coming off of the router. And inside of the router, your computers are laid out in a bus, which is one straight line of connections coming off each other. So port 1 and port 2 comes off of port 1, and port 3 comes off of port 2 in one straight line instead of in a star topology like is on the outside of your router.
Right, so basically you assign it a certain pattern inside the router, the routing map.
Router,
routing pattern. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, depending on the protocol that it uses, like if it's the Ethernet protocol, then that assigns it a logical way of navigating inside of the router.
Okay, so here's an example. If you've got a hub, which we don't use very often anymore, you've actually got a logical star. Like if you look at the hub and you've got all the machines sitting out around the room and they're all pointed out in different directions, that's a logical star. But because, as we said earlier, in a hub it goes in one port and out all the other, we've actually got a physical bus. So that's why we make the differentiation between logical and physical topology.
Wouldn't that be backwards, Gary?
Yeah, I think you did that backwards.
No, I didn't. I said that the physical is a...
You said illogical was a star.
No. Yeah, logically it's a bus. Yeah, you're right, and physically
logically
it's a star.
Logically it's a bus.
Yeah, logically it's a bus.
Physically a star, yeah.
Yeah, it's physically a star. But when you actually look at the way the packets travel, it's like when you've got token ring, which we don't talk about.
We do. We're going to talk about that in a little bit.
Okay, well, it's like when you've got token ring, which we do talk about, you actually have what looks like a physical star, but it actually travels in a ring.
It's like ring around the rosy to get where you want
basically,
rather than just go straight
to
it.
No, it's past the seashell game. It's the seashell game. If you have the seashell, you get to talk.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that, and it will make more sense. A LAN architecture combines all of the components that make up the structure of the communication system. This includes the hardware, software, protocols, and sequence of operations. Type of topology determines the capabilities of the network, such as ease of setup, speed, and cable lengths. We're going to go over the different types of physical LAN topologies. In the bus topology, as I said, each computer connects to a common cable. The cable connects one computer to the next, like a bus line going through a city. The cable has a small cap installed at the end called a terminator. The terminator prevents signals from bouncing back and causing network errors. So it's basically, if all of your computers were lined up in one line and connected along, and the signal had to go through every computer to get to the computer it needed to get to. That's...
For the one ham radio person that's here and anybody else who may understand, the terminator stops the signal from reflecting back down the cable. It eats the signal at the end of the cable. It stops an impedance reflection, and that's what the terminator does. When you pull the terminator off, please don't chuckle anybody, the network will stop working. Hasta la vista, little network, okay? So don't remove the terminators from the end of your bus.
But that isn't very physically... You know, that doesn't make any sense physically.
So the terminator says, I'll be back.
Yes, yes. So that doesn't make very much sense physically. You're not going to do that physically. But in a lot of routers...
Well, we did. We so did. We did do it physically. We actually ran the little cable with all the T pieces and put the T's on the back of the computer and stuck the terminators on the end.
Okay, so you did. But you don't do it now. A ring topology... In a ring topology, hosts are connected in a physical ring or circle. Because the ring topology has no beginning or end, the cable does not need to be terminated. A specially formatted frame, called a token, travels around the ring, stops at each host. If a host wants to transmit data, the host adds the data and the destination address to the frame. The frame then continues around the ring until the frame stops at the host with the destination address. The destination host keeps the data, or gets the data out of the frame, and that's basically how the ring works. It's the pass the shell game, or possibly pass the plate of cookies around type of thing. Star topology.
And then you get one really greedy person/computer. And then nobody's got any cookies anymore. It takes forever.
Star topology has a central connection point, which is normally a device such as a hub, switch, or router. Each host on the network has a cable segment that attaches the host directly to the central connection point. The advantage of a star topology is that it is easy to troubleshoot. Each host is connected to the central device with its own wire. If there's a problem with that cable, only the host with that cable is affected. The rest of the network remains operational. And that is something that you might have on a small home network. That's usually the most common physical topology. Go ahead.
Yeah, because token ring, that could break, couldn't it, if one of those computers goes...
Oh yeah, it's
funny,
you're done if that
the ring's
if one
gone.
Of the computers
is
actually
down. No.
Like,
it's kind of like the old Chris.
Go ahead, Brad.
I was going to say, isn't it kind of like the old Christmas tree lights from years past, you know, one goes out and the rest of the string don't work kind of a thing?
Okay,
unless it's a dual ring.
Yeah, if it's a dual ring like FDDI is...
We haven't gone there yet.
you have a token that travels in each direction, and then when a machine fails, it works out that the machine's missing, and the token that travels around the other way makes up for the break.
But in a normal ring, in a one, yeah, in a one, in the ring topology where there's only one ring, when one goes out, they're all out, you're done. Same with a bus. We've got a hierarchical or extended star topology. This is a topology. It's a star network with an additional networking device connected to the main networking device, typically a network cable connected to one hub and then several other hubs connected to the first hub. Larger networks such as these, those of corporations or universities, use the hierarchical star topology. So you'll have a few different networking devices connected to the one and then computers hanging off them, and so it goes and on and on and on. And we've got a mesh topology. The mesh topology connects all devices to each other. When every device is connected to every other device, a failure of any cable does not affect the network. The mesh topology is used in WANs that interconnect LANs. So basically, this is a very expensive way to hook computers together because everything has to be connected to absolutely everything else. And gosh, I think this would just be a cable mess.
Wouldn't that be? I mean, if you, presumably, if you had, some troubles where things were really getting legged, you'd have a hard time figuring out what is actually wrong, wouldn't you not? I mean, it would be pretty.
Yeah.
You actually have monitoring software that shows you all of the map points, so that it actually draws it up on the screen. JFFNMS is a free monitoring software that will map it all out for you, just for fun. Network management system. It's not easy to set up, though.
Okay. The two most common logical, topologies are broadcast and token passing. A broadcast topology is first come, first serve. A host sends data to another device, or it can send data to all hosts on the network. So basically, you send it to the router, and the router sends it out. First packets in, first packets get sent out. Then we've got token passing. This controls network access by passing an electronic token sequentially to each host. When a host receives a token, it can send data on the network. If the host has no data to send, it passes the token to the next host, and the process repeats itself. That's the ring type of thing. Ethernet uses a broadcast topology. The physical and logical topology makes up the LAN architecture. The Ethernet architecture is based on the IEEE 802.3 standard. Remember that. You will be asked about it. So Ethernet is 802.3. This standard specifies that a network uses the Carrier Sense Multiple Access with Collision Detection, CSM/CD access control method. In this method, hosts access the network using a first-come, first-serve broadcast topology. Ethernet uses a logical bus or broadcast topology and either a bus or star physical topology. Now that is something you need to remember. That is asked about on the test. So your Ethernet is a logical bus and usually nowadays a physical star. Logical bus, physical star. That is Ethernet. As networks expand, most Ethernet networks are implemented using an extended star or hierarchical star technology. Standard transfer rates are 10 megabits and 100 megabits, or now gigabit Ethernet, which can reach speeds of 1,000 megabits per second. Any questions on the Ethernet architecture?
Well, you said that most Ethernet networks are a logical bus and physical star. But I mean, for example, I'm connected to a router that's sitting on the other end of the living room, as is the other computer that's on the network. If one of our computers goes clunk, the other computer works just fine. It doesn't.
That's right.
How is that a bus?
It's not. What a switch does is it opens up a micro segment between the two machines that need to communicate when the segment is required. So it is a bus to the point that if a broadcast goes out on the switch segment, the broadcast will go out to all machines. That is how it is a bus. But when it actually does point-to-point traffic, it does what's called micro segmenting, which means it says Aiden's PC wants to ping flood the PlayStation. Okay, send those packets to the PlayStation. When the PlayStation crashes, the only thing that happens is that the room gets quieter. Your PC will still surf the net. So in that respect, that's what the Switch is meant to do.
How do you ping flight again? Just
It's a thing called Evil Ping.
We don't
you
teach.
Can Google it up yourself, yeah.
Questions about the architecture.
So let me just... I want to clarify what you were saying, Carrie, about the broadcast. So the... even you mentioned that it's not... It doesn't fail when one of them fails, but it still busts because the router says, hey, do you need something? Okay, no, you don't. Do you need something? Okay, oh,
yes.
You do. Okay, well, you can have this. And it's basically how the information gets handed out. Is that what makes
yeah,
it a bust?
Yeah, does it go to you? No, okay, does it go to you? No, okay, it goes to you. Here you go.
Well, what actually happens is the Switch listens, and as each computer communicates, it then makes a note of what port that computer's on. So it says, you know, machine 57 is on port 1, machine 86 is on port 2, machine 94 is on port 3. If it wants to talk from 86 to 94, it goes, open circuit, port 2 to 3. Closed circuit, port 2 to 3. It doesn't make that noise, though, because that'd be really annoying. and then if it wants to talk from 56
to
84,
the AM radio
opens port from 1 to 2. Well, it does make little noises, but the point is that if there is a broadcast, like, say, for example, you do a DHCP discover, in other words, oh, give me an IP address, me, it goes to every machine on the network. But the replies don't go to every machine on the network.
Because you're using a switch. And it's just, and the switch is going to be smart enough to send the reply to you. Do you have any other questions on the Ethernet before we go to Token Ring?
How does wireless affect physical topology of a network?
Still a physical
that
star?
That just would make it a star. It's still a star? Okay.
No, it's not. It's a bus. It's actually CSMACA, which means that it is carrier sense multiple access. In other words, it checks that not two things are transmitting at once, and it actually avoids collisions. I don't want to talk about it. It's not very simple. Basically, the access point sort of chirps.
I was just trying to think. Well, I was just trying to think, okay, so some of my networks are wired, and computers are wired, and some of them are wireless. Is it still kind of a
physically
star?
Physically extended, like, star topology.
It's kind of
a physical extended star,
except it's not, because it is actually a bus. Because it's wireless, you can only transmit to one thing at once. It is actually
a
bus.
Yeah, that's true.
But the actual access point, that what does what's called beaconing. You know how when you wander around with your iPhone and it says scribble wobble is in range, and you go double tap and connect? The beaconing is the access point going scribble wobble, scribble wobble, scribble wobble every 200 milliseconds. And you're
I have a story about that real quick. A friend of mine had his Android phone out and just was looking, and he could see, so it was real quick. And we were going by, and one of the networks said, connect and you die. We were looking at access points as we were driving down the road.
Curiously, was that secured or unsecured?
I don't remember. It was secured, but we died for about 2 minutes because it was just so...
I have a story about wireless beaconing, just quickly. A couple weeks ago, I went out to throw the trash out and drive up my trash bin onto the verge, and I got lost. Don't ask how, really. But I decided, okay, I don't have my GPS on me, so I'm going to use the wireless beacon to bring myself home. As I said, we have three of them, so this didn't really work.
The signal's good all around the house, so you can't exactly get closer and further away.
So I probably
you get
did
a good
last.
Signal wherever you are.
So with the...
Good thought, though. I mean, that, yeah.
Sorry.
If you were at my house, that would have probably worked.
Yeah. What were you going to say,
only
Luke?
Got one.
I was just going to ask, so with the wireless topologies and stuff, does that mean it's still a logical bus the same way, as in port 1, port 2, port 3, port 4, port wireless? How does that...
No, because wireless don't have ports,
it's
really.
You actually have up to 32 stations assigned, and each station gets a certain share of the bandwidth depending on how much it transmits and received.
You know what?
I didn't really want to talk about
it. We're not in Discovery. We totally don't have to deal with this. That's a good thing.
It's a wireless, and it just goes everywhere, and you get on the internet and you get happy, okay? We're not going any further than that. The wireless is wired onto one port of your switch, just so you know.
Oh, right. Okay, yes, I think that's what I was asking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's simplify it and say the wireless is wired onto one port of your multifunction device. It's onto one of the ports of the switches. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Tonk! Computer's plugged in. 6. Wireless.
All right, let's move on to Token Ring. This architecture was created by IBM to be reliable network architecture. Token Ring is used with computers and mainframes. Token Ring is an example of an architecture in which physical topology is different from its logical topology. Kind of like every other one that we've been talking about, but hey. Token Ring topology is referred to as a star-wired ring because without the outer appearance network design is a star. The computers connect to a central hub called a multi-station access unit, or MSAU. Inside the device, however, the wiring forms a circular data path, creating a logical ring. The logical ring is created by the token traveling out of the MSAU port to a computer. If the computer does not have any data to send, the token is sent back to the MSAU port and then out to the next port to the next computer. The process continues for all computers and therefore resembles a physical ring. And that's only one ring. FDDI, Fiber Distributed Data Interface, is a type of token ring network implementation and the implementation and topology of FDDI differs from the IBM Token Ring LAN architecture. FDDI is often used to connect several buildings in an office complex or on a university campus. This runs on fiber optic cable. It combines high-speed performance with the advantages of the token-passing ring topology. FDDI runs at 100 megabits on a dual-ring topology. The outer ring is called the primary ring, and the inner ring is called the secondary ring. Normally, traffic flows only on the primary ring, so it's only going to flow on one. If the primary ring fails, the data automatically flows onto the secondary ring in the opposite direction. An FDDI dual ring supports a maximum of 500 computers per ring. The total distance of each length of cable is 100 kilometers or 62 miles. A repeater, which is a device that regenerates signal, is required every 2 kilometers, 1.2 miles. In recent years, many token ring networks have been replaced by faster Ethernet networks. And just because they're...
If you want to know more about Token Ring, there is a Thursday chat in the 2007 folder. Sleep is almost guaranteed. It's an interesting chat, but some people don't find it so.
Don't banks use these a lot, I think?
Yeah,
yeah, they do. There's also a wireless protocol called FROTL, F-R-O-T-L, that uses Token Ring semantics to actually guarantee a wireless mesh topology. But yeah, it's called FROTL.
That's a funny sounding name.
Well, I have to mention it because some Perth people came up with it. So it's frottle.sourceforge.net.
Oh, okay.
Well, if hopefully all devices can go through the frottle.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Okay, are we all somewhat okay with that? Have we exploded too many brains here?
Well, that's cool.
I was thinking of being evil and saying asking about VPN, but I guess that's just another port like wireless.
We're not there yet.
Discovery.
All right, cool. Basically, what you want to know is that Ethernet has a star topology physically, usually, and it is a logical bus. That is probably the entirety of really what you want to know out of this section, and that basically logical and physical topologies can be different between, or they just can be different topologies. That's
also
really...
why our network people get paid so much, because this is not just as simple as plugging the cables in, everyone. So that's why if you train up to be a networky person, they give you lots of money.
And you want to know that Token Ring exists, and it's basically like the C-shell game. All right. We won't talk about standards, because honestly, Luke did, and he did really well, so we won't cover it. Basically, IEEE developed the standards for Ethernet, which is the standard that governs cable Ethernet, 802.3. This is one of the standard numbers that you'll be tested on, so remember that. This says that cable Ethernet networks must use the CSMA/CD access control method. All end stations listen to the network wire for clearance to send data, much like we listen for clearance when we cross the street. When the station sees no other hosts are sending data, it is then able to send its data. If another end station observes the same clear signal and transmitted at the same time, a collision occurs on the network media. The first station that detects the collision, or a doubling of voltage, sends out a jam signal that tells all stations to stop transmitting and to run a back-off algorithm. So it's kind of like when we all talk on Ventrilo and someone, you know, says, okay, stop, now, and everybody gets quiet and backs off. This back-off algorithm calculates random times in which the end stations will start to try network transmitting again. So, you know, we're all talking, we stop, and then someone randomly starts first.
I just have this image of this station going, back off, man! And then everybody just going all quiet.
In Discovery, you'd completely have a little cartoon that depicted that. And the packets would talk. So, yeah. This random time is typically 1 or 2 milliseconds, or thousandths of seconds.
All right, I have to hear the I want to hear the talking packet cartoon when we do. That's gonna be awesome. Like I will make vid show.
They're just diagrams. They're not like actually cartoons.
Oh, I wish they'd have done. They should have done a video. That'd be funny.
Oh,
we could do with that.
You know how funny that would
be. We could.
If they got little people to voice it, that'd be creepy.
Yeah.
That's what I thought you meant.
No. It's just comics. This sequence occurs every time a collision is on the network, and it can reduce Ethernet transmissions by up to 40%. The standard also specifies physical technologies that can be used on Ethernet networks. 10BASE-T is an Ethernet technology that uses a star topology. 10BASE-T is a popular Ethernet architecture whose features are indicated in its name. The 10 represents a speed of 10 megabits per second. Base represents baseband transmission. In baseband transmission, the entire bandwidth of a cable is used for one type of signal, as opposed to broadband, where you can have different signals on one media. T represents twisted copper cabling. 10BASE-T. There are many advantages to using 10BASE-T. Installation of cable is inexpensive compared to fiber optic installation. Well, yeah, you'd think, because it's just twisted pair cabling. Cables are thin, flexible, and easier to install than coaxial cabling. Equipment and cables are easy to upgrade. There are also disadvantages to using 10BASE-T. The maximum length for a 10BASE-T segment is only 100 meters, 328 feet. Cables are susceptible to EMI, and those are your disadvantages.
That is electromagnetic interference, not the music company.
We've got fast...
is only 10 Mbps.
That's
a big disadvantage of it, is it's slow.
Well, they're talking about it as opposed to cable or fiber optic types of... Yeah. We've got fast Ethernet. The high bandwidth demands of many modern applications, such as live video conferencing, streaming audio, have created the need for higher data transfer speeds. Many networks require more bandwidth than 10 megabits per second. Yeah. 100BASE-TX is much faster than 10BASE-T and has a theoretical bandwidth of 100 megabits per second. 100BASE-TX has advantages. These are, at 100 megabit transfer rate of 100BASE-TX are 10 times the bandwidth of 10BASE-T, obviously. This uses twisted pair cabling that is inexpensive and easy to install. There are also disadvantages to using this, and they are the maximum length for a 100BASE-T segment is the same as a 10BASE-T one, 100 meters or 328 feet. And your cables are susceptible to EMI.
What's the egg?
I don't know.
Because I've never seen it say 100BASE-TX.
Yeah, me neither. But it says it twice here in my notes, so I'll have to have a look at what that's about. And we've got 1,000 base T.
Yeah, it does on the curriculum notes. I wonder if that would be us.
Roman numeral 10? Or no, that wouldn't make any sense. I have no idea.
Well, no, I was wondering, Grace, if it was because that's... I mean, what you'd be using there really is your Cat 5e UTP cabling. So I'm wondering if it relates to that. As
no,
in if the
you
X...
can use Cat 5
shift
cable.
Your microphone up a bit. You've ruined our normalization. You bad person.
Okay. You sort of sound like this.
Thank you.
Do you know why it says 100 base TX?
Base TX, Kerry?
No, or I would have answered the question.
Okay, oh, okay. Well, that's all.
I wasn't sure if you were paying attention.
Yeah, he was.
I was. Just okay. Don't know. So I'm not answering the question.
Okay.
I don't know. Yeah, it's odd. Because 1,000 base T technically shouldn't use
doesn't
Cat5
have,
cabling. Yeah. But 100 base T can use regular Cat5 cable if it wants to. 1,000 base T is commonly known as Gigabit Ethernet. Gigabit Ethernet is a LAN architecture. You've got advantages to this. Basically that it's fast, supports data transfer rates up to 1 gigabit per second, which is 10 times faster than your fast Ethernet, and 100 times faster than the regular Ethernet. This makes it possible to implement bandwidth-intensive applications, such as live video. This architecture has interoperability with 100 base T and 10 base TX. There are also disadvantages to using this. Your same maximum cable length, and it is susceptible to interference, of course. Gigabit NICs and switches are expensive. Well, they're coming down in price now. Additional equipment is required. All right.
And you have to use Cat5e or better.
Additional equipment such as what?
Gigabit switches.
Gigabit switches.
Cat5e cable.
It's
not going to run.
Your Cat5e cable, your gigabit switches, and the cards, network cards in the computers,
gigabit compatible.
Or whatever, have to be compatible, yeah.
If you're environmental,
it actually
uses more energy.
Gigabit capable these days?
No.
No, and in fact, a lot of netbooks default to having 100 megabit Ethernet cards in them, so that's something to be aware of. You'd have to check to see whether your card was gigabit or not.
Sure it was.
Yeah, yours should be.
Yeah. Okay, we've got 10 base FL, 100 base FX, and 1,000 base SX and LX, which are fiber optic Ethernet technologies. That's about all you get about those. You're not going to be tested on them, and yeah, they're there. Wireless networks are governed by the 802.11 or Wi-Fi standard. You'll be tested on that also at some point. So wireless is 802.11. Ethernet is 802.11
because it's easier.
This is another standard number you must know. 802.11 is actually a group of four standards. These are 802.11a, 802.11g, and 802.11n.
Bang.
Bang, but kind of mixed up.
Abgen is the way they have.
Yeah. Well, the devices conforming to the 802.1 standard allow WLANs to achieve data rates as high as 54 megabits per second. These devices operate in the 5 gigahertz radio frequency range and within a maximum range of 45.7 meters or 150
this is 11A.
Feet. Yeah, that's what I said.
I didn't hear the A come through on Ventrilo. It's 11A.
Oh, I almost didn't
about.
Either. Yeah.
So they're fast, but they're short range. 802.11B operates in the 2.4 GHz frequency with a maximum theoretical data rate of 11 megabits per second, so much slower than A. These devices operate within a maximum range of 91 meters or 300 feet, so it's double the distance. IEEE 802.11g provides the same theoretical maximum speed as 802.11a, which is 54 megabits per second, but operates in the same 2.4 GHz spectrum as B does. Unlike A, G is backwards compatible with B since they run in the same spectrum. G also has a maximum range of 91 meters, 300 feet. So G is really the best of both worlds. So A is fast, but low range, and not backwards compatible. B is slower than A, but can travel farther. 802.1G is the best of both worlds, and is backward compatible with B, because it runs on the same frequencies. 802.11N is a newer wireless standard that has a theoretical bandwidth of 540 megabits per second and operates in either the 2.4 GHz or 5 GHz frequency range with a maximum range of 250 meters or 984 feet. So one thing you need to remember is not all of your devices have a 5.4 gigahertz module to them. Your N may only work in 2.4 GHz mode on certain devices. Most of the time you should be right, but it really depends on the device. Also,
ours is all in 2.4. We don't have any 5 gig N stuff. So if you have a 5 gig N access point and all of your devices are 2.4 gigs, they won't connect to the 5 gig access point.
The other thing about the 5 gig access point is
some of them are only 2.4N. If you look at some cards and stuff, they're 2.4N, and some of them are 2.4 and 5. You actually need an extra antenna for the 5. You need an antenna for each. So you end up with two wireless antennas.
Oh, okay.
I've found that the 5 gigs stuff doesn't travel as far. But that's just me.
It doesn't travel as far because the wavelength means that the... Brian would know all about this, but the higher the wavelength means that it's more line of sight and it's, not going to travel as high a distance.
The how come you need an extra antenna when you can just twiddle a radio dial and get all the different frequencies?
Because on a radio, you have only one band frequencies that you're looking at. You have to do something to go to a different band or have a different antenna to do a different band.
You look at, say, FM, it goes to 88 to 108 megahertz, so you've got a 30 megahertz spread and you're receiving only, so antenna length is not critical. If you are transmitting, the length of your antenna is critical because otherwise you'll get unwanted signal reflections. You're also doing a thing from 2.412 gigahertz to 2.49 or whatever, so you've got to across half a gigahertz, I should say. So if you're going to go from 2.4 to 5, they are two completely different bands. And in fact, if you look at an AM and FM radio, not that many radios have AM on there anymore, they have two aerials in them. The big long pulley one that can stick you in the eye, that's the FM aerial, and the little ferrite core one that's inside the radio that when you turn it the wrong way doesn't receive your AM radio station.
All right, that's really it for us today. We're going to go through layered models, and I'm not going to break your brain with that this week, because we've already broken your brains once today. So we will come back to that next week.
What I will do, and I meant to do it this week, and I will try and get it done for the beginning of next week's lecture, is actually give you a demo of some wireless interference. I meant to do that this week, and I only just now remember that I hadn't.
We have a DHCP lab 8.9.2, which people seem to have a lot of trouble with. We might take a half an hour on Friday before the virtual machines presentation to go over that. Would anybody be interested in that? In having that happen?
Everyone breaks this lab.
Yes.
Yeah, it'd be good.
Okay.
It'd be good.
All right. That's two people. So yeah, we'll do it. It is kind of breakable, and it scares people because we do it a different, we don't have it already set for you guys. It's not statically assigned, which it's supposed to be in the lab, so people freak out because there's nothing in their fields, which is completely normal. So we'll go through that. It won't take us long, and we'll just do that lab together on Friday.
Some people get
Thursday
terrified.
Night.
Yeah, Thursday night, their time. Some people get terrified by the fact that they're releasing their IP address. What if it all blows up and they can't get it back? That's another sort of, terrible fear thing that happens. So we'll cover that as well.
We'll work on it.